It's getting darker when the sun is gone, and it's tough on the streets. You can still feel the heat. Baywatch Wild Nights. Baywatch Wild.
Nights. Hello and welcome back to Baywatch Watch Nights. I'm Charlie.
And I'm Zach.
And we're back. We've got a very exciting episode today.
Yes.
Michael Burke, co-creator, co-producer, writer of so many episodes of Baywatch, and one of the creative forces behind Baywatch Nights. Please welcome back to the show, Michael Burke.
Ah, it's great to see you guys again.
Good to see you.
Great to see you. Yeah.
You know, Baywatch Nights is really strange that you're doing it, first of all. What's the reaction been? Have people liked Baywatch Nights? Or
You know what? So we've noticed that, like, people in comments on YouTube, it seems like maybe 50-50. Now, that's, you know, not scientific polling or by any means.
But in terms of our guests,
like,
yes.
People either love it and they embrace it, or they're like, oh, what is this? This is not like Baywatch. It's too different, or something like that.
Season one and season two are totally different.
So different.
Absolutely,
and we're on season two now, so it's like aliens and ghosts. And
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we've been having fun with it.
We've been having fun. Our guests enjoy the show as well, too. It's definitely
for
different.
It makes good fodder to talk about in the kind of recap format that we talk about, because it is so different. And there's so many times when we're like, you know, oh my God, like Mitch went from saving lives in the ocean to now he's fighting off like amoebas from the center of the earth.
Well, there's a long and winding road that leads to that situation.
Right.
I mean, Baywatch Nights, the story behind Baywatch Nights, the story in any episode. You know, how it came to be, how one actor could play the same character in two different series,
right,
and not want them connected in any way. I mean, we had given ourselves quite a task to actually connect it so that the episode you saw on Baywatch, Baywatch aired twice a week, syndicated channels, but we had two runs each week. So when Baywatch Nights came along, Baywatch Nights got the second run of Baywatch.
Mm-hmm.
Baywatch had one night, and Nights had one night. And I kind of outlined a whole Bible of how they could play off each other. And David didn't want Hobie around.
Okay.
He wanted to be Matt Helm or James Bond, you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Didn't really want the lifeguard world behind, he wanted to leave it behind, and he wanted to drive a Ferrari. I mean, yeah. It's really trippy. We'll get there.
One of the
things that we did notice in season one was the fact that the character is a little different, because he's very wholesome dad.
On regular Baywatch,
and in Baywatch Nights, he's a little bit of like a Lothario. He's like a womanizer
character, and he didn't want the female lifeguards because he wanted to prove that he was the ratings draw.
The draw.
Ah.
Baywatch, and it wasn't the girls and their boobs and the.
Oh, by the way, Michael, since you brought up you had me thinking. I'm like, I can't think of another show off the top of my head, but it is very unusual to have a character that's on one show and have that same character on a different show, but it's very different.
It came about in a very strange way, and I thought we did creatively really well, potentially, and then it kind of went off the rails, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that second season is definitely like off the rails in a way that we have enjoyed.
It's fun, though.
Bonkersness, but it is like, I don't think...
We had a great crew. We had a great...
Yes.
So whatever the crazy stories were, they were always well executed. And the actress, Angie Harmon, was terrific. And
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Greg Allen Williams. And then we switched to Florian.
Yes, that's right. For
there was, you know, good charismatic cast.
Yes.
So you kind of just went along for the ride.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Like I said, the story of how Baywatch Nights came to be really goes all the way back to the very beginning of Baywatch, when David had an opportunity to kind of be partners with us on Baywatch, and defer some of his fee and participate in the profits of the show. But that's when we came back in syndication.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
After the year on NBC, when we came back in season two in syndication, David elected to just take his money up front.
Mm.
And part of that, the way it was, even though he was an executive producer on the show, no, actually, was he an executive producer on Baywatch? Yes. No, not the first season, but in syndication. But he didn't have creative control over Baywatch.
Okay.
So it's like when we wanted to cast Pam Anderson, he didn't want to cast Pam Anderson initially because he wanted her boobs to distract. He didn't have any authority. It was like, okay, David, thanks for the suggestion, but we're going to, you know, exercise our creative control over the show.
Right.
So by the time Baywatch became a big hit and David's contract was running out, and All American Television, which was the production company at the time, wanted to extend his contract for another 5 years on Baywatch. This was like in season six or something like that.
Okay.
Actually, you know what? It was at the right around the 100th episode, because I remember this all came down at the 100th episode party that we had.
Oh.
Where it all kind of revealed itself. So what happened is David's contract was running out. So he had a manager named Jan McCormick, who was just a character. She was like your grandmother. She looked like your grandmother. She acted like your grandmother. She was tough as nails. Sweetheart, boys, you know, David needs this and he needs this. And she was tough, a tough negotiator. So apparently, as David's contract was running out and we were just about to do our 100th episode celebration, you know, and nobody thought we'd ever get there. We got there. And David had a lot of clout at that moment. He negotiated, okay, he'll sign his contract for Baywatch to do more episodes of Baywatch, but he wants his own spinoff series.
Mm, okay.
And that's what he was demanding, or, you know, Jan for him.
Yeah.
To come back to Baywatch. So they agreed, but they said, look, you know, you can't do a totally separate series. Everybody knows you as Mitch Buchanan. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to call it the David Hasselhoff show. We want Baywatch in the title of the new show. We want a spinoff. So you have to be the same character. And they would go, how are we going to do that? But matter at the time, they just wanted the deal.
Mm.
They made the deal. Neither Douglas Schwartz or Greg Bonin, who were co-creators with me of Baywatch, none of us knew that this was going on. So it was right around that 100th episode party, because I think it came out at the party, that congratulations, I mean, all the guys from the All American Television, the Scotty brothers, were at the big celebration, and they said congratulations on Baywatch being picked up, and you've got another show. You got a new show.
Okay.
Well, you got to do a show with David. It's been off. And on this one, David has creative control.
Ah.
That was his key. He negotiated a deal that he now had creative control, over us. He had the final say, final cut, final everything. And he negotiated that. And we said to All America, how could you do this without consulting us? You know, you're throwing this at us. Well, look, we got another show. It's going to take our second night of Baywatch. Come up with something.
Okay.
So I remember it very distinctly because it was after the 1994 earthquake. Earthquake that destroyed my house. My house collapsed.
Right. And yes.
I ended up leasing Faye Dunaway's house in Beverly Hills. And it had this great office in the back, which is like a separate room. I remember the meeting of Doug, Greg, Hasselhoff, and me in that back room coming up with something. And I had come up with Baywatch Nights. We'll do it at night. Garner opens a detective agency, and Mitch invests in the detective agency and has to protect his investment. And he gets involved in these episodes at night. But he's still the same guy. And we carry over during the day. The lifeguards are making fun of him being a detective. And they talk about shows. And we can, you know. So everybody liked that idea. David liked that idea. But he didn't want to be the same character, as I said. He wanted to be, I don't know if you know who Matt Helm was. Matt Helm was, Dean Martin played him in several movies.
And
he was a James Bond slick spot. Okay.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's, I was getting a little Miami Vice from this.
Ooh, I could see that too. Yeah.
As well. Like,
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole concept for the series is, was he would, we had met Lou Rawls and we had cast Lou Rawls in an episode of Baywatch called Lifeguards Can't Jump.
Remember that?
Right.
One.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good episode.
And so we thought, you know, let's set the whole thing in a nightclub, in a blues nightclub that Lou Rawls runs, and we could get all this cool music and that.
Yeah.
The nightclub. And then we came up with the idea that the guy that sells them the agency actually had a partner, this female partner, and he sold her in, and he didn't have the right to, who shows up, and now she's in, you know. She's a partner.
And that was Lisa Stahl, right?
Originally,
initially it was Lisa Stahl, and we shot a 13-minute promo during Baywatch. While we were doing Baywatch, we were on the Santa Monica Pier, and I wrote this whole kind of action adventure thing on the pier with this MacGuffin that was in a
satchel sort of bag, kind of
backpack. And you never knew what was in it, but people were chasing it, they were after it, and it was like the Maltese Falcon. And I thought we staged a really great at the pier with a lot of fun, and it was the tone of the show was more humor than I think the series ended up having.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. So the sizzle reel worked, and we had, it was great because we had Hasselhoff talking to the camera.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw it. What did you
think?
Loved it. Yeah, it was very enjoyable to see.
And the whole sequence on that ended up in an episode of Baywatch Nights.
Yes. The pier sequence where they're
the pier fight sequence. It ended up in, I think, episode
Silent Witness, episode 3.
Yeah, and it's the opening of that episode. So we recognize that.
We're like, that's
very
cool.
Yeah, very fun.
Yeah. Fantastic stuff though. But yeah, it was interesting to see. So in a way, Lisa Stahl's character before, I don't know if she was named Destiny in this promo. I forgot if that's the case.
She had a different name.
Different name.
Than Angie Harmon's.
Yes, it kind of right.
Well, when we did the 13 minutes, the promo, Lisa was terrific. We wanted her in, but we didn't think she was strong enough or right for the detective.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah.
We wanted her to kind of be the kooky character that they hang out with.
Yes.
And we could not find anybody to cast for that part. And then it was David Hasselhoff, who was on a plane, on a flight, and he heard this deep, husky voice. And he turned around and he saw Angie Harmon.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And he went up to her and said, "Are you an actress?" She said, "Well, no, I'm a model." I mean, you know, she had never acted before. And he told her all about Baywatch Nights and that she'd be right for it. And the irony is, it was David Hasselhoff who was discovered by Brandon Tartikoff, the president of NBC, on an airplane from Vegas to L.A. That's discovered from Knight Rider.
That's amazing. Yeah.
He only had like 45 minutes to make that discovery. It's such a short flight.
That's true, It is a short flight. Very short.
So Angie then, you know, came in. And so okay, now we've got this show, we've got the elements, and I've got to write the script.
Yeah.
So, you know, we all talk about it, we talk out story, we talk out all of everything, came up with all these what I thought were terrific ideas, and wrote the script. Probably took about 3 or 4 weeks to do the pilot script. Unbeknownst to me or any of us, David, who had creative control, hired another writer named, I think it was Maurice Hurley.
Okay.
I think it was him. It might have been somebody else.
Oh, yeah. The Maurice Hurley, I do see him listed as a writer, at least the main writer, at least on one
David
episode.
Hired another writer to write his own version of Baywatch Nights for episode one. And unbeknownst to me or anybody else, so I finished the script and turn it in, and then suddenly we find out from the executives at All American Television that they had two scripts, that David had commissioned his own script, and they were now going to choose. They were meeting with David and Jan, and we're going to choose which script to go with.
Wow.
And we, needless to say, totally shocked.
Yeah.
Finally got a hold of the other script. We said, we got to see this other script. And literally, you could not make heads or tails of it.
Okay.
It reminded me of when we used to, when we, our first serious job was for Glenn Larson on a show called Manimal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
So that was our, and Glenn Larson's thing was, because his scripts never made sense, he said, don't worry, we'll fix it in post. Well, we thought you needed to fix it in the script.
Right.
So the key executive from All American was a guy named Sid, who was our liaison for the whole time of Baywatch. He said, look, your script is so much better. It's great. This is what we want to go with. We were humoring David because David, that's what he, you know, he wanted and demanded just in case. But don't worry, we're going to go with your script. So they go off to this meeting of Sid and the executives and David and Jan. And they come back and they said, sorry, we're going with, David is insisting we go with Maurice's script.
Okay.
And to show you what a mensch I am, I ended up doing a polished rewrite on his script, taking no credit for it, didn't want it.
Okay.
His script to make it make some sense. So the pilot script you see now, and I just remember a scene where they're kind of hanging from a wire or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
I don't really remember it that well, because at that point, Doug and I were being courted by Disney for an overall deal to come over to Disney. Baywatch was a huge success. We had this spinoff. We didn't really want to write. I didn't really want to write Baywatch Nights or produce it. I mean, we did, you know, 22 Baywatch episodes, and then we're going to do 22 Baywatch Nights episodes, and then go right into 22 more Baywatch episodes. And,
yeah. You know, and,
was the Disney thing that the Thunder in Paradise? Is that what it?
Yeah. So Disney. Oh, cool. Yeah. Disney offered us an overall deal. So we said, look, go with God with Baywatch Nights and go work with Hasselhoff. And Doug and I went off and made a new overall deal, you know, and started doing other pilots. So we really weren't involved with Baywatch Nights.
Okay.
But they still, fortunately, had to pay us our entire fees, you know.
Yeah, so,
nice.
That was kind of a benefit.
That's nice. You didn't have to, don't have to do the work.
I
did have David solve a case for a guy who paid him by giving him a red Ferrari.
Oh, okay. Now, yes, I do remember that.
I got around. David wanted to drive a Ferrari and all the great suits and.
Yeah,
that's so great. I you know, I wanted to ask, I just thought of this, how busy was David Hasselhoff during these two seasons, more or less? I know he doesn't necessarily appear in every episode of Baywatch, but he's in most of them, so it just seems like he must have been working nonstop. I would
very busy, plus he would sometimes leave on a Friday and fly to Germany and do a concert on the
yeah,
wow.
So, you know, no, listen, he's a professional, you know, and, you know, I really didn't see all the Baywatch Nights episodes in season one. The only thing I was kind of concerned with at the time is that the Baywatch Nights was the ratings from Baywatch to Baywatch Nights were dropping off and falling off. Because Baywatch, they did, when they were figuring out the ratings, which you were able to base the advertising prices on, when we had two episodes on running each week, it was a cumulative rating.
Mm-hmm.
About a, you know, 2.5 on one night and 2.5 on another night. We had a 5 rating, which was, you know, huge. We could really demand a lot of money from advertisers.
Right.
And Baywatch came in and it was okay for a while, but then Baywatch Nights dropped rather, and ultimately was canceled after two seasons. And that's another story. Baywatch never got that second night back.
Ah. So
it started to really negatively impact Baywatch as well, because our little audience kind of fell off.
I see.
So part of the deal, I'm sorry. That was actually, that situation was more for Baywatch Hawaii. I was getting those two confused.
Okay.
But, you know, season one of Baywatch Nights just, you know, didn't take off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really had to do with Mitch being a different person.
I could 100% see that. Even us watching it all these years later, that's kind of what we felt too. We're just like, who? This is a different guy, basically. That's what it felt like. Even though it's Mitch Buchanan, it felt like it was not Mitch Buchanan. And yeah, I wonder if that's the case for a lot of viewers. Yeah.
Yeah, I think fans of both shows, or fans of Baywatch who would have been fans of Baywatch Nights, you know, tuned in Baywatch Nights, and after a while they just, and then if they watch Baywatch again, Mitch was hopping, going back and forth. You know, Hobie was with his mother and now he was, you know.
Yeah.
One of the things that we noticed is, you know, Mitch in regular Baywatch is so reliable.
Yeah.
Good dad, responsible. But the pilot episode is like him waking up like basically booze soaked on his clothes from the night before, living in an apartment, or like he wakes up in an apartment, and then eventually he goes back to the house in the show. But I remember in that pilot being like, where are we in space and time in Mitch's life? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, it was, we had a good problem. We had a second show.
Right.
I think we had solved it, but I think what happened was, in my opinion, humbly, that, you know, had David not pushed so hard for creative control, I mean, the reason he went with Maurice is he could control Maurice. He didn't control me.
Yeah.
You know, creatively. You know, I mean, I'd listen to him, and sometimes he had really good ideas, but, you know, I felt that I was kind of the arbiter of what worked and what didn't. And I think he that's why he kind of, you know, went where he was the showrunner.
Yeah.
I think it's very, very difficult for a star who's almost in every scene to also be a showrunner.
Yeah.
I mean, Greg did a really terrific job producing it. You know, he had to deal with Hasselhoff and all that stuff, and it actually carried over into Baywatch Hawaii. You know, when Greg killed Hasselhoff's character in Baywatch Hawaii. What happened was, actually, after that first season of Baywatch Nights, and Doug and I were off doing Thunder in Paradise and Daytona Beach and a couple of other pilots for different networks, so we weren't that involved with the next season of Baywatch.
You know, okay.
Less involved with that. And that kind of created a little bit of a vacuum, and Hasselhoff had gotten a taste of power. And so in that next season of Baywatch, he didn't want to go back to not having.
Right.
Since Doug and I weren't there that much,
Now he's an experienced showrunner.
Now they're really battling over Baywatch as well as Baywatch Nights. And that's why finally when they went to Hawaii, when the show moved to Hawaii, and Hasselhoff was in season one of Baywatch Hawaii. I mean, he was the star of the show. In the last episode, there's an eco-terrorist who plants a bomb under the ocean, and Hasselhoff dives down, and there's a huge explosion. And you go up to the boat on the surface, everybody's looking down, and at the end, Hasselhoff bobs up, comes up, and he survived. Okay. That was the last, and then Hasselhoff got on a plane and flew home. Greg decided to read the show and stayed there when Hasselhoff actually went on a boat and left the set.
Wow.
He kept the same cast that was on the boat looking for him. And what happened is instead of David surfacing, his wetsuit floated to the surface, all torn up. And it was edited that Mitch died. Hasselhoff didn't know it, was not told, didn't know it until his stunt double called him one day and says, guess what? We're dead. And then he found out that he had been killed off.
So it
all stems back to the whole Baywatch Nights diversion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, so he was not intending to leave the show at that point, or was kind of unclear? No, like his contract was? No. Okay. Wow. No, executive decision.
Yeah, it was.
That's very funny. that's a way to do it.
and nobody really knew, but it aired. Suddenly, there's nothing you can do about it, unless
yeah.
it was like, you know, on Dallas, where he woke up from a nightmare.
True. Yeah. wow, that's amazing.
But after or he comes back and says, I had to get a new wetsuit.
Sure.
After season one of Baywatch Nights, David liked the X-Files. We all liked the X-Files. Everybody
yeah.
liked
it.
And so the idea was to then suddenly somebody came up with the idea to make Baywatch Nights into the X-Files, and Greg Allen Williams didn't want anything to do with it.
Mm. Okay, I see. Oh, yeah, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Allen, he was a real life hero. He got a Medal of Valor during the LA riots, the Watts riots.
Wow.
Saved this Asian guy's life, pulling him out of the car and getting him, stopping him, all these other guys in the neighborhood from beating him up. And he stepped in and rescued and saved this guy and other people. So, you know, he was then writing books and other things. And
wow, amazing.
Wasn't that into acting anymore, but he certainly didn't want to go into, you know, fighting zombies. And
it's understandable.
So there was a very good actor cast, Dorian.
Yeah.
To play Diamant Teague.
Yeah, I don't remember his actual last name, but.
Yeah, I see if I can get.
He came in, and I think Eddie Cyprian came in sometime around that.
Eddie Cyprian was in season one as well, but yeah,
latter half of it. Yeah.
Latter half of it, because Donna was also halfway through season one as well.
And Dorian Gregory is his full name.
And it's kind of what's the similarity I was thinking? In season one of Baywatch on NBC, halfway through the season, NBC decided they wanted another young, sexy guy.
Okay.
They brought in John Allen Nelson.
Oh, Court? Was that right?
J.D. Court. Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, and Billy Warlock was kind of freaked out and asked there's another, you know, young, hot stud guy was coming into the cast. But it was the powers that be determined that was kind of an element that they wanted to add. And I think it was similar with Baywatch Nights with Eddie Cibrian. Looking a guy, the show's not working great. Another hot blonde, Donna DeErico.
I see. Yeah, that kind of changed things up. Lou Rawls, was that Was he just not able to do season two, or was that just a nat? Like, what do you know?
I think we probably couldn't afford him at that point.
I see. Loved having him on, though. Great Lou Rawls.
What's that?
Oh, I loved having that he was on the season one, though. Yeah, big fan of Lou Rawls. So.
Yeah, no, it was. We actually went to a parking lot in at Point Doom in north of Malibu, and built that whole exterior of that nightclub.
And
on that parking lot, so it was a practical location. And then built we had rented a warehouse that we had turned into a soundstage for Baywatch, and turned out that the warehouse next door became available. So we got that as well, and had like two studios that we kind of going back and forth.
Oh, awesome.
Wow. Wait, is that the exterior of Nights as well? Or
yeah, just the exterior of Nights, we built on the beach at Point Doom.
Wow. I did not know that. That's amazing. So cool. Yeah. Know what happened? Was it torn down after Baywatch Nights was over? Yeah. Okay.
Not only was it torn down, Baywatch Lifeguard headquarters, we made a deal with the actual lifeguards. They had a one-story lifeguard building with a crow's nest in the center on the second floor.
Yeah.
We made a deal with them, and we built a second floor on top of their headquarters as our set.
That's cool.
The city allowed us to do it, and I think it was because Greg was a lifeguard and had lifeguards liked what we had done, so they made the deal. We built it to code, so that after we left, they could still have a second floor of their building. After we left, they ended up tearing it down and painting it beige. So when you drive on Pacific Coast Highway between Temescal Canyon and kind of Santa Monica.
Okay.
There's a headquarters there. That's a beige headquarters, but that people don't recognize it now as the blue two-story Baywatch headquarters.
Yeah.
And what happened also with that is that we were in the first season, we were borrowing the lifeguard's boat. The lifeguards had boats, and they were called Baywatch. That's how we came up with the title. They were the Baywatch boats.
Mm-hmm.
But the lifeguards, one episode, the lifeguards needed their boat to go on a rescue. So we had to stop shooting while the lifeguards took their boat. So that's when we actually made a deal with Scarab.
Ah, mm-hmm. Okay.
To get those big yellow boats, which weren't really functional. It was the kind of more like tugboat type lifeguard boat vessel, but it was a lot sexier.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, okay. That's so cool. I did not know that. Real lifeguard boats at the time were kind of more boring, I guess. Yeah. The Scarabs are a cool boat. Yeah.
Easier to get somebody up on the back of the boat. It was low.
Yeah.
On our Scarabs, it was, if you rescued somebody in the water, it was not easy to get them on the boat.
I see.
Yeah.
It was often a cut from the water to being on the boat. weren't seeing them, if they were unconscious or whatever, lift and drag over the hull, the stern.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I just had a visual. I don't remember what episode this is, but maybe you might know, Charlie, but as well. But where a woman was pulled out of the water, and it is like it's a noticeable jump. Like I was like, I remember the reason I remembered is like I complimented the actor because she stayed in character as a person that is drowning, really aware. But she was pulled so far up over the boat. So that makes sense now. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think we would have had a sequel to the movie had it not been R-rated. We're against, but it just early on, The Rock said when asked if he wanted to do a Baywatch movie, he said off the top of his head, well, can we do it like an R-rated comedy, and of course the head of the studio said sure, of course, yes,
right.
And from that moment on, that initial just off the top of their head and a quick decision, it was never readdressed. Baywatch was a family show. It was always attracted, all the generations.
Right.
As sexy as it was still substantial.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So have you watched Baywatch Nights on the German?
Yes, that's the one we're watching. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
It hasn't been remastered.
Yes.
I don't think it's been syndicated.
Yeah. So we're watching the German, yeah,
the German version. And I know we said, I think last time we had John, we mentioned this, but if it's possible, we would love a remaster of Baywatch Nights. Here's two votes right here for a remaster. Yeah. We would love it.
Yeah.
Get Fremantle on it.
they did some initial research, and I think that it was still too expensive based on they thought. And what we wouldn't want to happen is you now have 44 episodes of Baywatch Nights come into the marketplace, and somehow it takes away from the remastered Baywatch.
So you're in the same situation you'd be in the 90s.
Ironically, we could be in the same situation.
True, that's true.
Because now it's a zombie. It devours some of the Baywatch.
Yeah.
Spots or deals or whatever.
Yeah.
It's so funny that you mentioned that when you mentioned the X-Files as being an inspiration for that season two, because it is funny because Mitch and Ryan do kind of have their like Mulder and Scully thing where like in every episode, Mitch comes face to face with like ghosts and zombies and stuff. And at the end of the episode, he's like, I don't think any of that was real.
I don't know if I believe.
I don't believe it.
I actually haven't seen the episodes of Baywatch Nights.
The guys who wrote the Conjuring movies were writers on season two.
A couple of, couple some of those episodes.
Two brothers,
Twin brothers, Yeah,
they were real. They're real lifeguards.
Oh,
okay. Wow.
That's how they came in. I think, did they write like not Alien, but the one with Stallone with the hunter in the woods, the alien hunter? Predator.
With
Arnold Schwarzenegger. I think that's different, right?
There was two lifeguards who wrote Predator in their tower.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Wow. I love Predator. Wow. One of the best Predator action films ever. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Write more scripts in lifeguard towers, everyone. Yeah, that's wow. Did you ever write on location, Michael?
These writers were Jim and John Thomas in
if you look them up, they were lifeguards.
Wow.
Michael, sometimes when you were kind of on set and had some downtime, would you work on scripts? They're at the beach, I guess I'm asking.
Yeah, and a lot of times, sometimes it was very unglamorous. I mean, when we were in Orlando shooting Thunder in Paradise, I was sitting in a motel room, by myself writing. Not glamorous at all. So sometimes, obviously you've got to get it done. There's no luxury of I'm not feeling it today.
Right. Yeah.
But absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I would often be called out to the set because something just wasn't working.
Yeah.
I remember this one episode that I really loved. It was the episode of Baywatch where this chief of the Chumash tribe has come to the beach to die.
Okay.
Because that's their land, that's their heritage, and this is where he wants to die. And they resist. He and his children and the other members of the tribe resist all the lifeguards' efforts to save his life. They want the lifeguards to die on this.
Okay. Yeah.
It wasn't working. I remember coming out to the set that day and totally redoing that whole last scene in a very emotional way. But it was after talking to the actors who were playing the Native Americans, the Chumash. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you've ever seen this photograph of me with an elephant on the lot of 20th Century Fox.
No, I don't think so.
So Doug and I, before Baywatch, had an overall deal with 20th Century Fox to create series. We had never written an episode of a series before. We had written a lot of TV movies and were successful and had won Emmys and stuff. And so Fox asked us to come over and do series. And the first one thing they did is put us with on that show Manimal so we could learn from Glenn Larson, how to produce episodic TV, 1 hour shows. And we learned exactly what not to do.
Right. Fix and post.
But we actually created our first show after seeing David Rappaport, who was a dwarf actor, in a movie called Time Bandits.
Yes.
Right.
And he was amazing. We thought he was
Terry Gilliam movie.
And the funny thing is, I just found among my papers a one-page outline called Leprechaun. First idea was to do him as a leprechaun, and we never did. We immediately threw it out, saying it was a cliche and all this other shit. But I actually found the one page. Wow.
This predates the movie Leprechaun, too.
Oh, which, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So we did him as a toy maker, and it was our first pilot, and the script got picked up. We shot the pilot, and to everybody's amazement, the series got on the air on CBS. It was opposite. It was on Thursday nights. It was opposite the Cosby Show, but the show got on. But the point is, this is all before computers. I used to write these scripts on a typewriter.
Wow. Right, yeah.
I don't know how I ever did.
Just editing what you wrote.
The editing, yeah.
With whiteout, was it? Maybe you could take out a word with whiteout.
Sure.
You know? But that was it. You know, whatever you wrote was it. So, you know.
That's amazing, yeah.
Harder to do stream of consciousness, because you knew the more stream of consciousness did, the more work you were giving yourself to go back and have to type it all over again. You know, luckily
did you have a bunch of crumpled up pieces of paper tossed behind you. You took them out of the typewriter and
couldn't afford that. I would write it up and then give it to Doug to read. We would discuss notes and then go back and, you know, I'd smoke a joint and do my editing. I'd write straight, edit. Hi, you know, and sometimes vice versa, but the point I was making, I we had a bungalow on the lot of 20th Century Fox, and I used to take one of those secretary tables with wheels that you'd have a typewriter on outside, and I'd be sitting there in like shorts and a t-shirt. It was hot, and I'd sit outside and write, these scripts. And one day, there was an elephant. They were bringing an elephant onto the show.
Okay.
Elephant basically walked over to me and stood over my shoulder with his trunk down, like on the typewriter. And somebody took pictures of me with this elephant over my shoulder. That to me was always a metaphor for the network, you know, or the studio.
Sure.
But when you ask that I ever write on location, I mean, I think it was the equivalent, you have to be able to write anywhere. And basically every script that Doug and I did, almost every script, we went out of town. We'd rent a house in Carpinteria near Santa Barbara or in Lake Arrowhead, and we'd rent it for 3 to 4 weeks and write the whole script.
Okay.
Wow.
3 to 4 weeks. So we were always writing somewhere.
So the episode you're talking about is Homecoming, the one where the Chumash man wants to die on sacred grounds. And we'll be seeing that in season 7. So
That's coming up.
Yeah, that's the next season we're doing is season 7 of Baywatch.
Yeah. Also, is it possible that Elephant had an idea for a pilot and just had to get it down?
I think so. I mean, it really is a classic picture.
I would love to see that if you
have
it readily available. That's very funny. I just love that's so cool that an elephant just walked right over to you. Just wanted to hang out.
Yeah, and now my wife and I were very involved in animal rights and saving elephants. And now we're actually involved with saving rhinos.
Awesome. Amazing.
I went to Africa and flew in helicopters saving rhinos from poachers, basically.
Wow.
And we're actually doing a celebrity poker tournament in a couple to raise money for rhinos.
Nice.
Really? Oh, I love poker. That's awesome.
Organization called Rhino 911, if anyone wants to look it up.
Like Reno 911.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 911. The idea is to fly in helicopters and with veterinarians and surgeons, and you basically tranquilize the rhino from the air and then surgically remove the horn so that they won't be of value to the poachers.
Oh, it's unfortunate, wow.
Sad that that's what has to happen, but you can't protect them all the time from the poachers. And, you know, these horns sell for like $50,000 each because they have curative value.
Wow.
So,
and you know, Baywatch won, there's something called the ARC Trust Award, which is an animal award for animal rights. Baywatch won it twice.
Wow.
Three times. We did one episode about horses that were being sent away, and we had Kent DeSarmo, the jockey, that was...
Yes,
I remember that
absolutely.
One.
Was in it. We did one with an orangutan, and the orangutan story is really great because it was an orangutan that was abused by its trainer, and the lifeguards got involved, and Hobie, and helped rescue the rhino. I mean, the orangutan. And... in the fictional story, we built a reserve for orangutans that where they could be safe and where they could live. The governor of Hawaii saw this episode and had land, government land in Hawaii, that he then said that he would designate as an orangutan reserve. Save orangutans where they could live out their lives.
Wow.
The first orangutan to move in was the actor orangutan from our episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Built the real orangutan sanctuary that we fictionalized. That was the second time that happened because, you know, if you go out to the storm drains, it's raining today, the storm drain, all the water's rushing down. At the top of the storm drain is like a circle usually. Sometimes it's a square. And it has a picture of a dolphin. It says, no dumping, drain
right. Dolphin.
I invented that for a Baywatch episode. That was the lifeguards went out with stencils to do that to stop people from dumping and polluting the bay. And it became a real thing. It was Heal the Bay.
Oh, yeah.
But it became a real thing. It's right, there's one right in front of my house.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I'm very familiar with those. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Growing up in Southern California, definitely saw it. Yeah.
A lot of impacts. I said with, you know, we did a lot of episodes with animals that and won the ARC Trust Award a couple of times.
That's awesome. Wow. I don't think we've seen the orangutan episode yet.
I don't think we have.
No, but yeah, but I'm looking forward to that. Wonderful animals. Wow.
So I know this is, you know, supposed to be focused on Baywatch Nights.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah.
Tangents are okay. We love them.
Yeah. It looks like this is a season 8 episode. Friends Forever.
Right.
The, yeah. Morton the orangutan.
I can tell you kind of just a humorous and a Hollywood great story with involves orangutans and involves chimpanzees and a gorilla.
Okay.
When Doug and I started doing TV movies, we had our first TV movie was produced by a guy named Paul Raden, who had produced Born Free and Living Free in Africa. And he was such a great older man. We were young producers. And so we partnered up and formed a company called Burke Schwartz and Raden.
Yes.
And decided to do a movie about chimpanzees so we could go to Africa and film a movie. And so I had seen this chimpanzee a documentary called Washo, who had learned sign language, American Sign Language, and could communicate with humans. So we came up with a storyline of these chimpanzees at a university that were being trained to communicate with sign language. And we're working with like deaf children and helping deaf children learn.
Okay.
And there was like a gorilla character based on Coco the gorilla, who's kind of famous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Relationship with Robin Williams. I met Coco.
Wow.
So we write this script, we sell it to CBS. They love the idea, write the script. Then we find out from a lower executive that the head of movies for CBS, Bill Self, didn't believe that the chimpanzees could do all the things we wrote in the script. The sign language, the going eating at McDonald's, interacting with children, and you know, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
So we set up a meeting with him and the executives of CBS to go in and try to make our case. And this company we were working for was called Marble Arch Productions. They're owned by Sir Luke Reid, who was a lord in the UK.
Okay.
Who was famous for as an entrepreneur of the East End plays and movies and all this other stuff. And Luke Reid was famous for always smoking a cigar.
Okay.
So we're in the meeting and the phone rings. Oh, Sir Luke Reid is in the building and he'd like to join the meeting with CBS. Mm-hmm. All the CBS executives sit up and, oh my God,
greatest. A lord.
Knock at the door, door opens, and in walks a chimpanzee wearing a suit, smoking a cigar. He had set up with his trainer. The chimpanzee sits on the couch, crosses his legs, smoking the cigar, like, okay, what do you need me to do? And we say, look, we want to show that the chimps can do everything we wrote. Hubert Wells, the trainer, is here. And just, what do you want the chimp to do? So he says, have him get the paperweight off my desk, this big glass paperweight, and hand it to me. So the trainer shows the chimpanzee what to do, walks over, picks up the paperweight. Now, if the chimpanzee throws it through the window, we have
no you're screwed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our movie is riding on this chimpanzee. So he puts the paperweight in Bill Self's hand, reaches around the back of his neck and pulls him into a kiss and kisses him on the lips. And then goes back and sits down, and Bill Self kind of laughs and smiles, says, okay, go ahead, make the movie.
Wow.
I mean, that's a real Hollywood story. It became legendary that we did that, that we brought this chimpanzee into the room. And we did the movie with Linda Gray, who played a Jane Goodall kind of character in Africa. Okay, the irony is we ended up not going in Africa. We had to shoot it in the water district of Tampa, Florida.
Okay.
It was like a forest, wood, you know, like a jungle. But
that's amazing. Yeah. I'm glad Bill Self wasn't a skeptic like Mitch Buchanan on season 2 of Baywatch Nights. And after that happened, he's like, I still don't believe these apes could do this or something like that. I'm glad he greenlit it. Yeah.
That's cool.
Very cool.
Any episodes you particularly liked from Baywatch Nights or your guests liked?
Oh, season. Our favorite one is from season 2, and it's one in which it's called The Creature, and it's a woman who's cross pollinated with a frog, an amphibian. Yeah. And so she's in a lab, and she gets out, and she basically kills like predators, like male predators, because she's like a very attractive woman, and
a predator is not like the movie predator,
not the movie predator. Like, these are the human predators. And it's fun because there's like a whole aliens type part where these SWAT soldiers are going through the gas tunnels underneath the city to try to smoke her out, and Mitch is trying to rescue her, and there's a whole nightclub scene where she's like clandestine undercover, and some guy tries to sleep with her, and she kills him. Yeah.
Wasn't there a movie with this blonde actress?
Species,
very similar.
Yeah.
I wonder if Species was before.
I think it might have been maybe before, one, she is definitely like, in Species, she's an alien who wants to kill everybody and take over the world. In this one, she's just trying to live her life, and all these men keep trying to get her.
Was it an actress that went anywhere?
I didn't really. Let's see. Baywatch Nights.
Part of your guest actress, I would think.
Yeah.
But
Her name is...
I'll have to look and see who wrote that.
Shelley Leather, but she and she's just listed as Silver Eyes. She doesn't even have a picture on IMDb. So
does she have other credits?
Yeah, she was in a few things. The last thing she was in was 2005, but she was in before this, she was in Fast Getaway, Double Trouble, Born to Run, then Players, LA Heat. She was in an episode of that.
Was that a movie?
LA Heat was a TV series. Oh, Born to Run was a TV movie, yes. And
did an episode of Manimal about horses where it turns into a horse, and it was called Born to Run.
Oh, really? Yeah, this one is with Richard Greco. Plays a local car racing badass who gets in with some bad guys, races in cars and races. Oh, and there's a girl in the mix too. Is the description.
Richard Greco had an intersection with Baywatch, and that he was Yasmin Bleeth's boyfriend.
Oh,
she had two boyfriends at the time, Richard Greco and this other actor, and she couldn't decide. They were both, you know, kind of chasing after her, and because I remember one day, like 100 roses came. One of them, but she's Paul Golden was the other guy.
Okay.
Wow.
And then Yasmin was dating the two of them.
Wait, who sent the 100 roses?
It was I think it was Greco.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
So she chose the other guy. She was like, I don't like roses.
No,
I don't know.
No, I mean, Yasmin, if you want, when I watch the old shows, because I love Pluto, I watch a lot of shows.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She's so good.
She's so good.
Yeah.
You can't take your eyes off her. She's gorgeous.
She was in a really good episode, The Curator of Baywatch Nights Season 1, in which a guy is trying, a murderer is trying to make a museum of dead bodies. So he's like posing them all, like people who had been mean to him throughout his life. And then he sets his sights on Caroline, even though she's very nice to him and has rescued him at some point, but she gets kidnapped. And so Mitch and Eddie Cibrian have to go and rescue her, but it was, she was a guest starring. And
yeah, I remember she guest starred in a nice episode.
That one's very fun because it's like a cool murderer setup because he sets up all these museum exhibits, but they all have dead people in them.
Was it like bodies where it's the musculature, or was it
they're kind of mummified?
They're mummified, yeah.
It's like his school teacher,
his
I think, was one of them.
Some school teacher who was mean to him, a police officer.
That I don't remember what the backstory was there, yeah, but yeah.
Killed them and then mummified them.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess.
Mummified them for a long time.
Maybe that's what it is. He just had them so long, and the conditions were right that they naturally mummified, possibly.
But then for her, he builds a lifeguard tower and traps her in it, and she's eventually going to.
It's like a prison cell lifeguard tower. Great set work, whoever designed that. But yeah,
we had a guy named Robert Henderson, who was absolutely amazing. I mean, he did stuff on a budget, you know, because we didn't have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And he was amazing, absolutely amazing. I mean, he stayed with us for years. And all these guys came over from The Wizard when we were doing The Wizard of Fox, the David Rappaport show. Jimmy Pergola, who was our DP, and basically the entire crew came over with us to Baywatch. And then even when we went to Florida to shoot other shows, we would take most of our crew with us. We were very loyal to our crew. They were loyal to us.
Nice.
Yeah. That's really nice. Yeah, I mean, great work by everyone, I must say.
Yeah, man. I mean, the cinematography in this show is fantastic.
People always talk about shows being a family, and it really was. I mean, you know, I always described the Baywatch lifeguards as a tremendously functional team and a dysfunctional family.
Mm.
And in a lot of ways, behind the scenes, the cast of Baywatch was a very functional team, but there was a lot of dysfunctional family elements going as well.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, there's a Baywatch documentary that I believe will be coming out very shortly.
Oh,
called Baywatch: The American Dream.
Oh, I think I've heard about this on Instagram.
I think we got followed by that on Instagram. That's awesome.
Been doing it for about 3 or 4 years. They interviewed Doug and me, and a lot of personal stories of the cast.
Uh-huh.
Really personal stories of the cast. So it's not as much about the shows as it is about the cast. But it's 4 hours, 4 episodes. Awesome. And it's on a major streamer. I don't want to reveal who it is because they haven't.
Okay.
But it looks like any day now they will close that deal. And I really like these guys that are doing it. I wish them the best. And it'll be interesting, again, the timing of how it connects to rebooting the series.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say... from their Instagram, because they do post some clips. I don't know if it's going to necessarily be in the show or their outtakes, whatever, but it looks fantastic.
Yeah, are the personal stories of the different people. You know, like Michael Newman,
mm-hmm.
It's him for 25 years fighting Parkinson's disease.
Mm.
Now here you've got the most athletic guy in the world. I mean, there's stuff, carrying weights, running underwater, working out, just, fighting off Parkinson's.
Wow.
Wow.
So there's that personal story. Nicole Eggert is a producer on it.
Together.
There's a lot of stuff with Jeremy Jackson, who's very honest about all the stuff that's happened in his life since Baywatch.
Right, yeah.
Billy Warlock, who is a ski instructor now up in...
Wow.
They go up there and... David Chokichi and uh-huh. Jason. Anyway, it's I haven't seen it. So I'm hoping for the best, but it just came out a couple of days ago. When I saw it on Instagram.
Yeah.
They made the deal and I called the guy and he verified it. So,
wow.
Awesome.
Very
happy to hear that. I think that'll be really fun to watch.
Mac, you got to show your cards.
Oh, I look at this. Michael, check it out. I got a birthday gift from Charlie himself. I got these Baywatch trading cards.
These are like 1996 edition packs of Baywatch trading cards.
That's so cool. I've got a collection of them, but I just found these in my storage.
Oh.
They're Baywatch stickers.
Stickers.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Fan stickers series.
Nice.
Ooh, nice.
Got a whole bunch of them here.
That's awesome.
Well, one the guy that's doing the documentary, when I was talking to him, there's these two. These little cards.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I wonder if that's a different series from this one.
I think so, because they have a whiteboard.
Number 8
yeah.
is Mitch and Pam. It's got a number of says stuff on the back. I can't see. Save these stickers in a folder. I guess these are the stickers that that are in the packages.
Gotcha.
The guy doing the documentary was saying to me, because we're talking about collectibles and things like that. And he said you should auction off some of this stuff, because I'm kind of the collector of everything. I've got stuff in storage that I've moved around with me for 30 years. All the original scripts. Every episode had a notebook that had the scripts, the editing note, everything in it that pertained to that episode. And so I've got them all. And my wife has been like, "You're gonna still keep lugging these around?" So this guy was saying, you should donate them or auction them, maybe for charity, to raise money for charity. I was thinking of all the. Apparently, he said that there's a big market for people to who collect Baywatch stuff.
Yeah,
I bet. Yeah, I mean, I guess me and Charlie are collectors, you will.
Yeah,
I have a couple scripts. Stuff. I think. What's that? Sorry, what's that?
Bathing suits.
I don't have it yet.
But yeah. Summer's coming up, so.
It's on Instagram or something. He has all these suits from different characters. I've got a Pam suit autographed by Pam, and
nice cool.
Men's suits.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, those, yeah.
It's Barbie, you know, they had a lifeguard Barbie, you know, because we had a Baywatch Barbie that was the number one Barbie of the year it came out.
Nice.
And not only that, we have Barbie, we have Baywatch Barbie, Baywatch Ken, and then there's like a black Baywatch Barbie. And,
oh, cool.
Another like character that's not a character, but
just like a made-up character also.
I was surprised we weren't in the movie. I was a little...
Oh, yeah, that would have been great. To
have that would have been Barbie. Cool.
Yeah.
I think there was a lifeguard character, lifeguard Barbie in the movie, but not...
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It wasn't Baywatch. I watched it recently. Charlie, don't you have a CJ...
Mine is not... Something? It's a CJ it's Parker Barbie. Baywatch doll, but it's not Barbie. I'll go...
Okay.
The reason the Baywatch... The CJ doll came out is because when Baywatch Barbie came out, Pam got upset.
Okay.
Barbie, this is me.
Yeah.
Baywatch.
Yeah.
Pam, Baywatch CJ. You know, I should be opposite. Yeah,
okay, so this is the one instead that they made.
That is, yeah, let's, okay, we'll do a Baywatch CJ.
Yeah.
Very cool.
The Baywatch Barbie comes with a dolphin, a pet dolphin.
Okay. Actually, that's from an actual... No, that was a seal. I take that back. It wasn't a dolphin.
Yeah.
Oh, but she does meet a dolphin at like SeaWorld in one of the episodes, I think, right? Does that sound familiar, Charlie?
Oh, yeah. I think so.
And she befriends a dolphin down there. That's right. But the seals, though, or the seal... It was a sea lion or a seal. I forget which one. But that one actually comes and like lives with her for a while. That's a great episode, too.
Yeah.
So, here's... Oh, shit.
Oh, careful.
Here's a Barbie.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, yeah. It is very CJ-like.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
The back of-
oh, and Ken has like a wave runner, I guess.
Oh, this was the number one selling Barbie and the eighth selling toy of all toys. Here's a Ken.
Wow, yeah. That's wow. Really
yeah,
amazing.
Ken has a wave runner.
That's so cool.
But here's the strange one is Baywatch Teresa.
Okay. I wonder, is that the first time that I don't know much about Barbie. I wonder if there is a Teresa that just a character they made up for this.
There wasn't a Teresa.
It's supposed to be Spanish.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Alerta Malibu. Lifeguard Barbie, Ken, and Teresa race to the rescue to save the dolphins. That's what it says on the back here.
Oh, nice. Oh, and Teresa comes with a surfboard, it looks like, maybe, or something?
Yeah, she's got her paddleboard.
That's so cool. Cool.
She's got a rescue can and a frisbee. And
that's really cool. The one that Charlie has, the CJ, were there more in that series? Do either one of you know?
I think it came out afterwards. And I think it was a separate manufacturer. I don't know that it's Mattel.
Okay.
Let's see. Who is our manufacturer here? Toy Island.
Okay.
It says look for other Baywatch products at a store near you. So maybe they did. Maybe they did do some other ones. It looks like maybe they have a Mitch. They have a Stephanie and a CJ.
Cool.
Okay, this is The Babes of Baywatch.
Oh, it's a comic
book? It's a comic book.
Yeah.
That I don't know if it ever came out.
Oh. Interesting, yeah.
But it's really raunchy.
Okay. I wonder if that was like an independent comic book maker.
Somebody put it out, The Babes of Baywatch.
Yeah, I don't.
Oh yeah.
You find anything about it? It might have come out. I don't know. Yeah, I found it listed on a couple sites.
Is it?
Yeah.
I.
But maybe not like.
I found.
Yes. Okay.
I don't know if it has a date on it.
So I'm trying to find it. Adam Post Media, 1996. Huh.
Then there was a Baywatch magazine. That was cool.
There's a lot of love for the show out there.
Yeah, a lot of people are seeking out because like Baywatch was important to them when they were a kid. We get some people who contact us from other countries who this was kind of their introduction to American culture was watching Baywatch.
Absolutely, yeah.
Were, yeah.
And people still enjoy watching the show.
Awesome. I met a girl at a party at the Playboy Mansion once.
Okay.
Who moved to Los Angeles just because of Baywatch, you know.
I get it though. It's beautiful. The show looks beautiful, and I can imagine someone just being like, "Oh, that looks like a great place to live, a fun place to live."
Well, it was a great choice that we made to shoot it in 35mm. Everybody wanted us to cut the budget and shoot it either in 16,
yeah,
than in video.
No, yeah.
And we shot it in 35, but we never developed the 35. We used the negative to make a standard definition video.
Mm-hmm.
Show that was in standard definition until 5 years ago when we remastered it. But the remastering was very difficult because you had to take the edited episode on tape and run it through a computer and then take all of the negative film, which thank God we kept it in storage all those years. Mm-hmm. You have to run that negative through a machine that would search out the identical pixels between the shots. So let's say there's a 5-second cut on the tape in the final program. The computer would seek out that same 5 seconds from the 35mm and print it in HD.
Wow.
We have to do that every episode, 267 episodes. We have to do that for every frame of every episode.
Wow.
Ooh.
And then we couldn't use the songs, the montage songs.
Right, yeah.
We had publishers, performers, you know, writers. You had all these artists. We just couldn't afford it. So Corey Larios, who was our musical director and who scored all of Baywatch the entire time, he was the lead singer of a group called Pablo Cruz. One time. So he then went out and found like 35 singer-songwriters to write original songs to the montages that we had. And what was great is they would watch the different montages and they'd get assigned based on kind of their music. And they'd have to watch the montage and then write a song that had the same beat because the montage was edited.
Mm. Yeah.
The song. But now because they could see the whole episode and see what the part of the narrative, the montage was, they could actually write lyrics that helped, that were more to the point of what the song was about.
Yeah, thematic.
The songs on the remaster are actually better in most cases than the songs we used, except, you know, obviously we had to use the Beach Boys songs, you know.
Yeah.
A few of those, we couldn't replace the Beach Boys songs.
When
the episodes of the Beach Boys were in. So,
That, by the way, I'm a big Beach Boys fan, and I really enjoyed that episode. How was shooting that episode in general?
It was great, and that was a reunion for Dennis. Not Dennis.
Oh, Brian coming back. Brian. Maybe Brian coming
back. That was the first time he had been back with them in years.
Wow. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a cool episode. I mean, we came up with the idea and approached them, and they were into it.
Awesome. I'm glad they were game. It's a very fun episode.
But the beginning with Baywatch music, we had to beg to get songs to use, and then after the show became a hit, we had artists like Seal and Enya and a few other artists that basically kind of broke their music on Baywatch.
Oh wow!
Tag. There's an episode where there's a tag.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen the outtakes reel that I have.
No.
Of Tag? No.
Outtakes reel. One of them has to do with Tag. Tag. But basically All American, who was the production company, was really a music company. They only became a production company, because they produced America's Top 40.
Okay.
Television show. And so they became a TV company. And that, when we went to them, that was the only show that they had ever done. But they had done it in syndication. So they had sold advertising. They knew what they were doing. But they were really a music company. So they had signed this new group called TAG. And we were doing a concert episode on the pier, and they asked us to put them in it.
Oh, that's amazing. We laughed at that episode because we were like looking them up and we couldn't find a ton of information about them. Yeah. But they were so prominent and everyone kept being like, ladies and gentlemen, TAG.
Well, it was like when we did product placement for A&W Root
Beer. Oh, yeah. Love it.
An episode with Hobie, you know, with at the Western episode. And and Hobie's trying to impress the girl. Well, Dad, should I bring her some A&W Root Beer? You know, sometimes we just had to rent our soul. Didn't sell it, but
we loved it.
By the way, speaking of Beach Boys, I just remembered the very last episode of Baywatch Tonight season one. Maybe you've never even watched this one, Michael, but do you remember this one, Charlie? It's like a weird episode.
Beach Boys like band.
But it was,
'cause they're all related, that somebody's trying to kill them.
No, it's strange to me because it was like basically everyone except for maybe one guy in the band like raped a woman like back in the 60s or 70s or something.
Yes.
So I was. Does this ring a bell at all, Michael?
Yes. Or I.
It's kind of a little tingling bell, but that was, you know, really pushing the envelope for
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, yes. Oh my gosh. I do remember that.
We only had one censor on Baywatch. You know, that was the great thing. We had no studio and no network, so we could do whatever we wanted. So we had no censors. We had no one looking except this older woman in the UK.
Okay.
She would watch the episodes that we sent over to the UK and give us kind of censorship notes, editing notes for the episode for the UK.
Okay.
So the second episode in syndication was called The One That Got Away. And it was a fisherman.
Yeah, yes. The fish hook killer.
After, what was her name, the actress that we used?
Who was in that? We watched that a while ago.
She was a guest star. She was never on the series, but but anyway. This fisherman comes after her with a knife.
The character's name is Megan, I think, and it's
Vanessa Angel.
Vanessa Angel.
And talks about gutting her like a fish, you know.
Right. Yeah.
It's knife to her, and it's really kind of horrific. That was the only note of in terms of violence or anything like that we ever got, which is in the UK where they don't have guns. Knives are a big deal as a weapon.
Right.
Putting women in jeopardy. So basically our note from her was, you know, if we put women in jeopardy or use a knife, they would not air that show, that episode. Wow. And we couldn't afford for them not to air it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I always thought the UK censors were more lax when it came to content.
They were the only ones we had. And she was very nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And we were very responsible. So we never did anything else like somebody threatening a woman with a knife.
Right.
So I'm surprised there were, you know, rapists.
Yeah, yeah. It was a bit of a shocking episode, especially since it alludes to the Beach Boys. I feel like anyone that was watching it would think of the Beach Boys. So
especially since
like
they were all cousins in the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, it was a very similar type setup.
We did one episode about teenage suicide, and I remember that being a real issue. Because then the transition around the time of Baywatch Nights, this is the other impact of Baywatch Nights, going back, a really important impact of Baywatch Nights. With the success of Baywatch, All American Television, the production company, the syndicator, used the Baywatch money, the advances they were getting from Baywatch, to get a line of credit at a bank and use that line of credit to purchase the Goodson Todman game show library. Those were game shows like The Price is Right, Family Feud, all these major shows.
So they could like package them when they sell
them? Yeah. So, well, they would have the rights to them. And so they bought the rights to all these game shows. And this the distributor of Baywatch in Europe, the foreign distributor, was a small company called Fremantle. And Fremantle had two elements of it. One was game shows, and one was formats of shows. So he would sell the format of The Price is Right, and you wouldn't just see The Price Right from the U.S. There'd be Prices Right shows in every country. And their own thing. There was the format.
Oh, so they would produce their own versions of them in those countries. Yeah, right. Got it.
They would have to pay the rights.
Right.
So Tony Scotti, who was the head of the Scotti Brothers, who owned All American, owned Baywatch, bought the Goodson Todman Game Show Library, and bought the Fremantle Syndication Company, and sold that whole thing to a UK company called Pearson for $775 million. Now, when we brought them Baywatch, they were on the verge of bankruptcy. This was just 3 years or 4 years before. Verge of bankruptcy, sold for $770 million. And so this new ownership comes in of Baywatch. That we're meeting the Pearson, they had all the Pearson executives and all these new people that are coming in, and they came in just as Baywatch Nights was starting.
Okay.
And they basically wanted to be somewhat hands-on. You know, basically the other company didn't give us any notes ever. You know, the only battle was between Hasselhoff wanting control having control, and then on Baywatch Nights, Hasselhoff had control, but there were some battles. So what happened is, because of that, Baywatch Nights, and because of the circumstance, it created a vacuum where Pearson, we'll call it Fremantle because they ended up changing their name to Fremantle.
Okay.
Fremantle now owned the show, and they brought in an executive, a really tough, balls out, you know, old time executive from MGM, a real tough guy, swore all the time, whatever. They brought him in to run Baywatch Nights, and then for the next season, Baywatch. So because of Baywatch, also lost a lot of creative control of Baywatch at Baywatch Nights, and then Baywatch subsequently. So we went from having no interference to suddenly having a lot of interference. That's why Doug and I were like happy to be out of there.
Sure.
Doing these other shows for Disney. Because Baywatch Nights kind of created that circumstance and the timing of this new company coming in. So the company Fremantle, if you look it up, Fremantle is now a multi-billion dollar company. They own American Idol. They use the concept of game shows and formats to create American Idol, Spanish Idol, French Idol, every kind of Idol imagine. They also own America's Got Talent, Poland's Got Talent, Russia's Got Talent.
Right.
They now own all those shows, but that was all because of the... So Fremantle is now like a huge, huge, huge company that started out with Baywatch.
Wow, yeah.
Wow.
Baywatch allowed them to get those other rights.
That's amazing.
Considering like what they do with all these sort of shows, these format shows like American Idol, do you know if they ever had the idea to do Baywatch Spain? Other countries.
They wouldn't have the right to do it. I mean, But yes, I actually got the rights to do Baywatch China.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I was working with a guy who was producing in China, and we were going to do Sonya Bay Lifeguard. Sonya Bay is like the Hawaii of China.
Okay.
Okay.
All these resorts. And I've got this bad presentation, and we came close, but it was right again when the movie was happening with The Rock. And so it never ended up going. And, you know, the politics became a little bit challenging.
Sure.
And Baywatch Hawaii started out as Baywatch Australia. Baywatch Down Under. It was called.
I was going to say, because the Australian lifeguards and the American lifeguards have such a rivalry in Baywatch.
Yeah, no, it was Baywatch Down Under. We did two episodes or three episodes in Australia as kind of test of doing it. But right when we were going to go there, the Australian government was going to put up several millions of dollars to, you know, underwrite the expense of the show, because by then we weren't getting the revenue we had gotten before, because as I said, Baywatch Nights took away our second night and then was canceled. So but the public, the people, the citizens of the part of Australia, the Gold Coast or wherever it was, we were gonna Bondi Beach, I think it might have been Bondi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Protested.
Oh, okay.
City Hall. They didn't want the crowds, they didn't want the trucks, they didn't want the stuff, they didn't want the and so at when that kind of started to jeopardize shooting Baywatch Down Under, that's when the governor of Hawaii contacted us and says, I'll do the deal, come to Hawaii.
Wow.
Nice.
But so we were supposed to go to the whole show was going to be Baywatch Australia.
Wow. You said you filmed like around three episodes. Did you use any of that? Reuse any of that footage?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Are those in regular Baywatch, like in Baywatch season?
Really, really good episodes. As a matter of fact,
I guess.
One of the actresses that ended up in Baywatch Hawaii was an Australian that was going to be in it.
Oh, okay.
In that episode. And it was about a lifeguard who finds out that he has a son in Australia, and the wife, the mother never told him about it, and the mother died.
Yeah.
He's going with the Baywatch lifeguards for a competition in Australia, and it has to deal with having a son. Does he keep him or not? You know.
Yeah.
Wow. That Mitch's brother had that sort of
Buzzy.
Issue. Buzzy. Yes. Yes. Yeah. He had a son he didn't
know. By two different actors.
Yes. That's right. Yes. Yeah.
We also, one of the things that we're looking forward to seeing how this happens, but knowing the Neely Capshaw that we know now, that eventually Mitch yeah. marries Neely. But it's a different actress, I think, who's playing Neely by that point.
There were three actresses that played Neely.
Wow.
Right okay. now we're in the Gina Lee Nolan era, but we've seen before, the first one was
before Gina Lee Nolan was the one that accused Eddie.
Yeah.
Because she was drinking in her tower.
Right. Yeah.
Right. He busted her with that and she got him. And so at when we decided we wanted a femme fatale character the next season in Baywatch, we thought, Neely's the perfect character, but we didn't really want to use that actress.
Right.
Dogs are freaking out. The plumbers must be doing something.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, so Neely, and then it was really a mistake to have Mitch marry her.
Oh.
It worked out well for the Alaska episode where they were married by a ship's captain, but when we decided it wasn't working out for Mitch to be married and have a little baby and all this other stuff. It was simple to just say that the ship's captain was an imposter. Didn't have the legal right to marry them.
That's hilarious. I love that.
Amazing.
Reasoning.
So what happened is Jennifer Campbell was an actress who played in the Point Doom episode with Matt.
Yes.
On the motorcycle.
Oh, she's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she's also was. Then we brought her character back for another episode with Matt.
Yeah.
And so when it came time to, you know, basically Julie Nolan, you know,
she's the one who plays Neely later, right?
Yeah. So Jennifer Campbell came in to play Neely. I don't know. Did I tell you the story about how I got a hypnotist to cure Julie Nolan of stage fright?
I don't think so, right?
No.
Yeah, I loved hearing it.
So Julie Nolan was on, had been on the Price is Right, you know, just showing objects and holding things up.
Okay, yeah.
And she had never acted before. So when we brought her onto the show, I mean, she was terrific, had a great personality. She looked great, fun. And she would really work hard on learning her lines, learning the script. Huh. And then Hasselhoff would improvise.
Oh.
Totally throw her off.
Right.
Get very nervous, and she didn't know what to do and where to go and whatever. So toward the end of season one, her first season in the show, she came to me and said, look, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to quit. It just makes me too nervous. And I can't handle it. And so I'm going to quit. But none of us wanted her to quit. We all really loved her character.
Yes.
So I had a friend in Vegas named Marshall Silver, who was a hypnotist who did shows in Vegas as a hypnotist. And I watched him do some amazing things. So I brought him out to him, and he hypnotized her and gave her post-hypnotic suggestion about stage fright and how to feel and whatnot and whatever. And it totally cured her, totally turned her around. She talks about it.
Wow.
It totally turned her around. She stayed with the show and it changed her life.
Oh, wow. Amazing. I'm glad that worked out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I could totally see how that would throw someone off that had no prior acting experience if David was improvising a line. It'd just be like, I'm sorry, what? And then just, so I'm glad it ended up working out.
Yeah. I mean, that's more interesting, I think, behind the scenes.
Story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Well, also there was an Inquirer story about the feud between Pam and Julie Nolan.
Yeah.
Came out. The new blonde and the Pam's jealous and all this other stuff going on. Couldn't have been farther from the truth. I mean, they really liked each other. They got along great. We, as producers, actually propagated that story and kept it going. with the actor's approval, to us, basically, because we knew the publicity we'd get. So
great publicity, yeah.
Yeah.
People want to see if that translates on screen.
When we learned that when, you know, Pamela's sex tape came out, our ratings went through the roof. So that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah. It, by the way, it does, it seems like, at least my perception from watching the shows, that the actors really did get along with each other overall. A lot of the actors, thoroughly.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, and the thing that they also liked is we shot so quickly and efficiently that instead of working 9 months a year on a series, they'd only work 5 months a year, because we would, instead of like an 8-day episode, we do basically four days. We were so efficient.
Right. Yeah.
Use the show and how the scripts were written to be, you know, to not have to be fixed in post. So they had plenty of time to use the fame that Baywatch helped them develop to do other projects.
Yeah.
You know, so it worked out for everybody. But, you know, we were able to keep the budget realistic.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to still capitalize.
Yeah. And that, I mean, nobody's gonna, yeah, 5 month shooting schedule versus nine. That's a lot of time they get to spend with their families. Yeah. And doing other stuff. And yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for Hasselhoff during Baywatch nights.
Yes. Hasselhoff was working 10 months a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, but you know, we just had a lot of opportunities then. We did a lot of other pilots at the same time. And the Baywatch reunion movie, you know, we realized 2 years after Baywatch ended. Oh, and Baywatch, by the way, when the show went to Hawaii and we had to cut the budget, Doug and I reduced our fees because we were going to be not active, involved in Hawaii. So we reduced our fees and deferred them till season three of Baywatch Hawaii. So we defer the fees for the season one, season two, season three, go out and have a very successful NAPTE, you know, to sell the show and syndication, all that other stuff. But that the same company that had bought the show realized they had 267 episodes and they didn't necessarily need more episodes. And if they picked up more episodes, they were going to have to pay Doug and me a considerable amount of money. Right. So they canceled the show instead. So Baywatch never got its Baywatch Hawaii season three, and we never got our deferred fees.
That's happening a lot right now with a lot of shows that are coming out. A lot of these streamers are putting the majority of people's fees into season three of a television show and then canceling it after season two.
I mean, if it's successful enough, they'll pay the bonus. But I always thought about that, like in football with these football players.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
A certain number of yards, the guy's 10 yards short.
Yes, yeah.
They could just keep him out of the game.
It happens all the time in football, especially in NFL. Other of the major sports, their contracts are a little bit different. But NFL, it's oftentimes like, okay, if you do this, and then they'll stop it right before that happens, and then they won't have to pay him however much.
My uncle Sherwood Schwartz, who created Gilligan's Island.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
So Gilligan's Island, if you look, you'll see it has 99 episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sherwood was supposed to be paid this huge amount of money on the 100th episode. And they canceled the show at 99. Well, Sherwood ended up suing them.
Okay.
And not only did he win and got the deferred money, but he got all the syndicated rights to Gilligan's Island back.
Whoa, okay.
All that success of Gilligan's Island.
Yeah.
Ever and ever and ever, and his kids, my cousins or whatever, it's all, they now basically own it.
Wow.
And Sherwood is the one, when Baywatch was canceled, and then we were asked by Fremantle, can you do new episodes? And we went to a Passover dinner at Sherwood's house and said, complained that we haven't offered, if somebody wants to do new episodes, but we don't own the show. And it's in deficit. What are we going to do? And he said, well, look, Grant Tinker's out of business. His company, his financiers pulled out. He's out of business. He said, and I'll never forget these words, Baywatch is your Gilligan's Island. Mm-hmm. Why don't you go see if you can get the rights back from Sherwood? I mean, from Grant Tinker. And so we went to see Grant Tinker, and we told him we wanted to do the show again. He said, there's no way you can do it on a syndicated budget. It was $1,250,000 on the network. You can never, the economics just don't work out. We said, well, look, we want to try. We did motorcycle movies for Roger Corman. We know how to do it for less. Let us try. So he said, okay, I got to sell it to you for something. So he sold us the rights to Baywatch for $10. And that's when we went and got it back on the air and got the budget down to $730,000 from $1,250,000.
Right, yeah.
While still doing a full union. We got the unions to cooperate. And shooting it just more wisely.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Sherwood, who his experience with Gilligan's Island paid off for us, because otherwise we would have never gone to get the rights to Baywatch back.
Yeah, because I did not know that about him getting that they weren't going to pay him on the 100th episode, but the fact that it blew back in their face so badly that he got all the rights to that. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We never did anything. We didn't really, he might've had a better language in his contract, but we're fortunate. I mean, our ownership of Baywatch, even today, there's no creators for shows today that get close to what we had, because we had bought those rights back.
Yeah, you made it yourself.
License the deals to other people. We made one mistake. We didn't hold on to the copyright. When we made the deal to get Baywatch back on the air, and the company wanted the copyright, we go, look, anything. We just want to get the show back on the air. You know, we weren't thinking, you know, of the value except getting it back on.
Fremantle got the copy. They bought the copy.
So Fremantle, it was All American Television got the copy, but then it passed down.
I see.
And we have friends that founded Hooters. We know the guys that founded Hooters. We were actually going to do a movie or a series about the founding of Hooters. Great story.
Wow.
When the guy came to them after they had opened up two Hooters, he came to them and said, "I want to franchise Hooters." Mm-hmm. They sold him the franchising rights, but they kept the copyright. So all the way down through the years, Hooters, they've kept all this value because they've owned the copyright to Hooters. So
they learned from the McDonald's, the Michael Keaton movie taught me that. He went in to get the franchising rights, but he also took the copyright to the McDonald's name. And they lost everything.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, there's no business like show.
Thanks for listening to our conversation with Michael Burke. We'll be back next week with an all new episode of Baywatch Watch Nights. And until then,
stay wet
at night. When the waves are crashing. Thanks for listening to Baywatch Watch. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode. If you're just joining us, please subscribe to Baywatch Watch on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave us a review on the Apple Music Store. It really helps us out. Thanks, and until next time, stay wet.